All right, hey everybody, welcome back to another exciting episode of 90s Horror Films. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got an awesome show for you guys. We've got special guest John Ward here. How you doing, John?
I'm good, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm doing fantastic, and thank you for coming on. So what I did was, and I've talked about this on the last episode, but I tried to find people who, haven't been on. Well, obviously, nobody's been on the show before because this is the first season. But I was trying to find people who might be interested in doing 90s horror films. And you were one of the people who said, yeah, I'd love to come on your show. And you've come on most of the shows. We need you on 80s horror films and some other ones. But, so I was like looking for somebody to come on and talk about different ones, and I had a list, and From Dusk Till Dawn was the one that you picked, so there you go.
That is correct.
And you said I think you said when I and I can't go back and look up this up because we've had so many conversations since this talk, but you said that the From Dusk Till Dawn, you picked it because you know a lot about it or something, like you've done a lot of research on this film, I'm guessing.
I've seen the film a bunch of times, watched the sequels, Full Tilt Boogie, and then just read a bunch of stuff about it online, that deals with non-union crews and things like that it kind of had like a troubled production in a way, how did Tarantino and Clooney get involved, in this and stuff like that. So yeah, so I out of the ones that you gave the list, that this was the one I knew the most about.
Mm-hmm. So yes, let's first of all, when was the first time you saw this movie?
When it came out.
So you saw it in the theater?
Yeah.
Okay, I saw it. I don't know. It had to be a few years after it came out. Cause I remember when this movie came out because I was in middle school, by the way, when this movie came out. That's it came out in 96 and I was in eighth grade. And hello, kitty. I was in eighth grade and one of my substitute teachers came up and we asked, like, for some reason he was asking us like what we did this weekend, which is weird for now looking back, like why would a substitute teacher be like talking to kids about that stuff, but he mentioned that he had gone to see this movie From Dusk Till Dawn and he didn't know anything about it except it had George Clooney and it was done by Tarantino, and so I guess he had known about Pulp Fiction and whatever. And so he said that he had watched it and he did not know that there were vampires in the movie. I guess he didn't see trailers for it or whatever. So like that surprised the hell out of him, because he was expecting it just to be like the heist stuff, or whatever, the action, stuff that Tarantino does. And boy, was that a turn. For everybody.
Well, it's a combination of Desperate Hours and Night of the Living Dead. So while I was watching it, it is literally 1 hour and 1 minute is when the vampires come in. So they obviously constructed it to be 1 hour of the Desperate Hours, which if you don't know what that is, it's a film from the 50s with Humphrey Bogart, which was later remade with Mickey Rourke, and then right at that 1 minute mark, 1 hour, 1 minute, it turned into vampires, which of course this would be Night of the Living Dead, so which was the intention all along. So both Tarantino and Rodriguez have talked about that.
Yeah, like, and I think that was always the plan from when they first were he started writing. If I am correct, I don't know if you've done a lot of research like this or not and whatnot. I remember hearing that Tarantino, this was before Pulp Fiction and everything or so. He had known the KMB guys from, I guess he was a big fan of Intruder, and he knew Scott Spiegel and those guys, and they worked on Intruder. And the KMB effects guys paid Tarantino to write the script for From Dusk Till Dawn. They had that idea. And then Tarantino kind of did his own thing with it, obviously. And then they didn't make it till like 95 or 96, whenever, you know, or so, when Robert Rodriguez already made Desperado and whatnot, you know, and starting to get his name out there more.
Yeah, Robert Kurtzman wrote the story for this. Yeah, then handed it over to Tarantino. And then, of course, they had already worked together on stuff like, yeah, like, you know, Desperado. I think that they're a great team. I don't think that there's ever been two film directors that have worked this well together, you know, where one guy can direct one film and then the other guy directs another film, and then one guy writes one film, then the other guy writes another film. They just seem to be a very good pair. So I think it's just one of those things where they just matched. Just everything just kind of worked out with them.
It's so weird to think, like, they also did Four Rooms, you know, together. And so wildly different of a thing, you know, project. But I honestly like From Dusk Till Dawn a lot better than Four Rooms. Four Rooms had some.
Oh, I hate Four Rooms. I think Four Rooms has got awful. I think it's so horrible.
I like Rob Rodriguez's short for it. And I don't mind Tarantino's short for it, but it's a little too Tarantino, you know, like.
He did the one with the finger, right?
Right.
The chopping, yes, of the finger.
Yes.
Which was just an Alfred Hitchcock episode. So
right.
Alfred Hitchcock is that.
Yeah.
So he just stole from Hitchcock. So
pretty much.
At one time, I really loved Tarantino and Rodriguez. And then I fell out of love with them. And so I've been really kind of cynical on them since. So it's even though I do tend to think that Tarantino is a better writer, but I think that Rodriguez is a better director.
Exactly. And that's why they work for this movie. You know, speaking of which, I was watching it and I was like going, holy shit. The angles and the shots and everything are just perfect. Like, even just the beginning with Clooney, when they're doing the robbery at the beginning of the film, and they're holding up the I guess Benny from Benny's World of Liquor or whatever. So Benny's behind the counter there, and it was George Clooney's got his gun out, and just that close up of Clooney, right? And then they pull back to reveal, like, Tarantino talking to Clooney, and then you get the shot, full shot, like, on Clooney again. I mean, Robert Rodriguez is so good, you know, like, that was framed perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
And just a punch in just was good. Like, I just gave me goosebumps how really well done and well shot the movie is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and it's, I'm actually a bigger fan. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I actually like the TV show better than this movie. I think that it's three seasons. I've seen two, so I still want to see the third, but I think it's more of probably what Robert Rodriguez wanted to do, mm-hmm, story-wise. You know, it's more fleshed out, so if you haven't seen it or people out there haven't watched it yet, I suggest that. But as far as just this film goes, it's just a perfect synergy between the two of them, and it's just everything seems to work. And that, because remember that opening scene, they're not robbing the place. Tarantino is just supposed to go in and get a map of Texas. That's all it was. It was a simple, yep, thing. They were just gonna walk in, get the map, and walk out. And then, of course, Tarantino's, you know, his the character's head is he's so screwed up that it turned, mm-hmm, into this giant thing, and, yep, and you know, which is where Clooney yells at him and saying, you know, what do you don't know about being discreet, you know, do you not understand what that word means?
I would have loved to see like a prequel to the Gecko guys, you know, the Gecko brothers, because there was so much with Richie's character that I felt could not be explored in a whole, you know, movie, right? And
it's in the TV show.
Okay, so there's more with it, because
they really kind of get, yeah, it's not a prequel, but it's because the first season of the show is basically the movie just over a bunch of episodes, and then they kind of do like a prologue, but you do get more into Richie. You start seeing his delusions, and you start seeing kind of how his head works,
right?
And it's an interesting way. It's really like Rodriguez wanted to, you know, flesh it all out. So even the music in the film is great. You know, the score is really good. All the stuff with the bands are really good. You know, I love that the drummer from Oingo Boingo is the drummer at the, you know, at the Titty Twister. I think is awesome. That's, you know, Vatos, Johnny Vatos.
And that's awesome.
Just the score is great too. The Blasters doing, you know, Dark Knight and all these different bands are in it. It's just one of those. And there's also, I noticed one thing, Lawrence Bender is in the film, which I didn't catch until this viewing, is when we're meeting up with Harvey Keitel, and they're in like the Denny's type place, is the very first person you see, and the camera kind of flows by him, is Lawrence Bender. And
nice.
He's always behind Juliette Lewis. So he's out of focus, but he's always there. So nice. There's little cameos and stuff. And also, this is the film where George Clooney learned not to keep his head tilted. Because if you watch him in ER, his head is always tilted. So when he talks to somebody, he kind of looks down and it's tilted.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess they really worked with him to keep his head straight. And even though there are scenes where his head's kind of down and tilted a little bit, it works. But they really didn't want George Clooney from ER. They wanted George Clooney action star.
And they got it. They
forced him to get out of that head tilt. Yeah.
This was the movie. Like, this is universally one of the first times that a TV actor became a movie star. They've been talking about this for years, that like for a long time, TV and movies were separated. If you were a TV star, you were not going to be a movie star. If you were a movie star, you were not going to be a TV star. And that kind of thing, you know, vice versa. Now TV and movies are like this, are the same, you know, right? Like TVs are just longer movies. Just like you said, with the From Dusk Till Dawn, I used to actually have the El Rey Network. I'm not sure if we still do in the satellite stuff or not, but I don't even know if it still exists, because I really haven't heard about it. And we'll get into El Rey in a little bit, but the thing is, like, I used to watch the show. I watched like a few episodes, and I got into it. It's just I couldn't keep up with it, and I didn't watch the whole first season. So I need to someday, you know. I don't know if it's on Netflix or Hulu or one of those, you know, things or something, you know.
Somewhere. I know they're out on Blu-ray. I'm sorry, they're out on DVD. I know that.
They're not on Blu-ray?
I don't think they're on Blu-ray yet. No, I think like I've seen on like eBay where people are just selling all three seasons, and they're all DVD. So
okay.
And the one thing that I like is that Rodriguez changed the Gecko brothers from just being like two white guys to actually two Hispanic guys. I think that actually fits them much better. I think it fits the story that Rodriguez is trying to tell.
Right.
So I really liked the series. I thought it was good, but I'm glad that it didn't go past, even though I haven't seen this third season, I'm glad it didn't go past that, because I think that it's probably one of those things that doesn't really last past season three.
Well, so it's interesting now that I'm thinking about it. So the Texas Ranger that they shoot in the beginning of the movie, Earl McGraw, played by, what's his name? Michael Parks. Who's wonderful, by the way. Like, he's just great in everything he does. He did. Sorry for saying that, but unfortunately he's no longer with us, I don't believe.
Yeah, he died.
Yeah, but he was so great. I loved him. I loved him in Tusk. You know, I think Kevin Smith found them from Robert Rodriguez, and Quentin Tarantino is the one.
Oh yeah, he's creepy. Discovered him. Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's so. But it's like, so Tarantino. I remember seeing him on like an interview or something talking about Michael Parks, and he said, or it was commentary or something. But he was like saying that the thing with Michael is you have to write dialogue for Michael, you know, because he has a certain way of saying stuff or whatever. And you can definitely tell with this character, him just talking very slowly and specifically and, you know, whatnot. He was pretty. And then you listen to him in Tusk and he does the same sort of thing where he's like a slower talker, you know, and everything. And I guess that's just him. However, Earl McGraw pops up in other movies too. And so it's sort of funny, right? Because Tarantino and Rodriguez have like their own like kind of universe together, like cinematic universe. And they kind of tie in all these different, a couple different characters. He's in Kill Bill and then he's in. So like, if you think about it, like, does that mean that Kill Bill takes place before, you know, before From Dusk Till Dawn, or is it, I don't know, is it a Earl McGraw from another universe? I mean, you
know, like, right.
What are they trying to say? Because it can't be this same character sometimes. Maybe. I mean, maybe it is. Like I said, maybe it's before, because he doesn't die in everything, you know, or whatnot. I don't think he dies in any other movie but
Dawn. This would have to be, yeah, even if he acted in something with Tarantino after this, this would still have to be the very last. Like, if they did a timeline, This would have to be the very last one because he dies. So that's, unless he just wants him, you know, in it as that character and there is no timeline. You know, it's just, oh yeah, just come back as that character. I need a cop. Who cares? You know, because that's, I mean, it's one of those things where maybe there just isn't a Tarantino timeline. You know, maybe there isn't, there's a universe, but there's not a timeline.
Maybe, but I don't think so. I think he's very specific about things because he has all these characters that kind of, you know, you look at Reservoir Dogs and you look at, what is it, Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, and both like Michael Madsen's character and John Travolta's characters are brothers, you know, because they both have the same last name, you know, and that's been said by Tarantino. They are brothers. He was even going to do a movie with both of them or something. Maybe. I would hope that would be his last movie.
Yeah,
that he maybe brings them in to the Kill Bill world, because a lot of people are saying that they're pretty sure that he's going to do Kill. What's her name? And what's the bride's name? Is there ever, did she ever say her name? And it, but Uma Thurman's character as the bride, but it's like I know they're going to have the daughter from Vivica A. Fox's daughter character, you know, the character's daughter come back to fight, you know, to try to kill Beatrix, right? Wasn't her name Kiddo? So it might be Kill Kiddo or Kill Beatrix. I don't know if they do another one.
Yeah. I've heard about stuff, and yeah. I mean, he's thrown ideas around a ton of times. I mean, he was going to do a Halloween movie. He was going to do a Star Trek movie. He was going to do, you know, there's so many movies that he said that he was going to do that never happened. So we'll see if Kill Bill 3 even happens.
Well, he's got one last one in him, he said. So one last original film. And
I think that is the dumbest thing that any filmmaker could possibly say. I'm only going to make X amount of movies. How dumb is that?
Well,
I mean, to me, that is just so, it's just an intention getting thing that, you know, don't say that. Just if you want to make 10 movies, then just stop for a while. And then you can come up with an idea, because then you become like rock bands that go, oh yeah, this is our last tour. This is our farewell tour. Spend $100 a ticket. And then 3 years later, they come out with their second farewell tour. So it's like, do you really think Tarantino's going to stop making movies? You know, after his 10th one, no, he's going to continue making films.
I don't know. My thought was that he might get into TV, which isn't film, and he could make these epics.
But he can't make a movie. He can't make a TV movie.
What I'm saying. He can't make a TV movie, but he can make a TV series. He can create one, or
you just shouldn't you just shouldn't put a number really on anything.
Well, that's the reason he's doing
the
it.
The end of the world will be here in 3 days. Don't put a freaking date on it. Just sit there and say the end of the world will happen. And then when it does, you can say, see, I told you the end of the world was going to happen. You just don't, put a date or, you know, it's like, you just don't do that. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know. I
feel like the end of the world has already happened and we're all just living in it. It's just, you know, we're just existing and already the end of the world. It's just already, you know, we're all in our own little piece of hell. But no, anyway.
Well, you know, my piece of hell in From Dusk Till Dawn is the Asian son that's
He wasn't the greatest.
I remember him being a horrible actor. He's literally, and it even says at the beginning, introducing, what's his name? And I'm like, introducing? Like, where did you, it has to be a producer's son. It has to be something where Rodriguez was forced to use him. He is worse than Sophie Coppola in Godfather 3. I mean, and she was horrible. And this kid is such a non-actor who shows no emotion and brings the film down a notch. That's my hell. That's the hell I lived in for almost 2 hours while watching this film is, why did this kid get... He's the only bad thing I think in the whole movie. Everything else I like. But he is such a horrible actor that he was the best out of the auditions? Really?
You know what's funny?
There's something else going on there.
You know what's funny? The kid, I just looked him up. The kid was on a TV show after this movie. Only one episode, of course, but he was in a TV show called The Faculty. That's funny.
Oh.
So.
Anything to do with the.
No, I thought so too. I thought so too, but it was made in 96. It was only one season. made in 96, and it's a comedy. So. I'm guessing it's a comedy about a bunch of faculty, like teachers or whatever, you know. But it's just sort of funny. It's ironic that later you'd be in a movie. He wasn't in the real faculty, but he wasn't. He was in the TV show. He hasn't acted since 2005.
Thank Christ for that, because he is so awful.
Maybe he's gotten
it's
better.
It's hard for me to believe that. No, I doubt it. I mean, having him up against Harvey Keitel is just like, what are you doing? This is Harvey Keitel, and you're putting this non-actor. I mean, if they did pick him, he's no Edward Furlong. I mean, Edward Furlong, you know, was picked out of obscurity for Terminator 2. And Cameron, you know, knew what he was doing. Everything past Terminator 2, Edward Furlong has been horrible in. But it's Terminator 2, he was actually quite good. But this is just like, man, how did they get this kid? And I know why Coppola put his daughter in Godfather 3, because, you know, it's his daughter and she was the baby that was being baptized in the first Godfather. And so it was a whole family thing. But it's just like, God, why is this kid in this? This is so, so bad.
Well, I mean, there's no Lou's in the producing team. So I don't know. Maybe he just, I don't know. You're right. I have no idea. Maybe he's a friend of, cause you know, Rodriguez does use a lot of friends, you know, or whatever. Maybe he's a friend's, you know, son or something. And he always wanted to act and, you know, put him in the movie. I would have put him as like an extra or a small, like one part line, but I mean, who knows? He might have auditioned for it, and he did pretty good at the audition. Some people do great in auditions and then suck when they get into the actual movie, you know?
So. Recast.
He's not, like, Rodriguez, I've noticed, is no, like, not Mel Brooks, Woody Allen. You know, Woody Allen will do that. He did that to somebody and replaced him with Juliette Lewis, you know? You know, which... She did a fantastic job, though. I think in this movie, it felt like this was the wrong role for her. She was supposed to be like a teenager or maybe 20, but like she looked like she was 30. you know, like she looked her age.
Well, you know? She said that she's not 21 yet, you know, right. When
well, I'm saying she could have been 20. So. She's not 21, but she was still, she did not look 20 or less, you know.
I think that she was supposed to probably be like 17 is what I'm thinking, that she's supposed to be closer to, you know, her brother, the adoptive brother.
Yeah. And Bob, what was that?
In the movie at all. And I thought that she was, oh, she didn't bother me in the movie at all. So it's because, you know, she was, you would have to look it up, but when the remake of Cape Fear was done, you know, she was the kind of the little Lolita in that, because, you know, Robert De Niro kept hitting on her, you know,
right.
And basically tried to screw over Nick Nolte.
But yeah, but wasn't that like,
but that's kind of like her, was her standout role.
But wasn't that early 90s though?
Yeah, you would have to look it up for I'm not able to do that, but it's one of those things where I'm not sure where these films kind of fall in with From Dusk Till Dawn, but you know, California with a K, and of course Natural Born Killers, stuff like that.
Yeah, that was 91. Like she'd probably be closer to looking that age in 91 as opposed to 96 when this was made. So 5 years later, I mean, I don't know. It's I didn't buy her age. I bought her like the same, close to the same age as fucking Clooney. You know, she was getting up there.
Well, I mean, I think that she's meant to be around 17, but of course I could be wrong, because Harvey Keitel doesn't object to her drinking, you know,
right.
When Clooney gives her the shot, he doesn't say anything. She just goes, I'm underage. And then he goes, well, you're drinking anyways. And then she does, but Harvey Keitel doesn't say anything. So maybe she's supposed to be like 18, you know, well, or 19, something like that.
Keitel doesn't say anything because basically he has a gun to him, you know, or whatever. Like, because if he argues with Seth, he's afraid Seth is going to kill them, you know. So he has to. The only thing is, like, Seth at least, honestly, at least said, you know, at that one point was just like, hey, can I, you know, have. Seth asked him to drink, and then he said, I don't drink, blah, 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 right? And Seth accepted that, but didn't accept the kids because he wanted to, you know, he didn't want to drink alone. That's what he said. And then later he actually asked, Harvey Keitel to drink with him. And I thought it was nice that they bonded for a second, you know, like, at that particular moment or whatever. So drinking brings people together is, I guess, what they're trying to say.
I guess. Even if you're underage. I'm guessing that Harvey Keitel's character was probably an alcoholic because his wife died. He probably got into drinking, and that's why he says, I don't drink. And then, you know, he's saying, well, no, you're going to drink with me. And so, but there's nothing that he can do. Like you said, you know, he's got a gun. So he does it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because he's definitely bold enough to tell Seth that he's a loser. And he says it twice.
Oh, yeah. I love that. See, that was a Tarantino line. There were some lines in this movie that were so Tarantino, like nobody else could have wrote them. Or if they did, if somebody else wrote them, people be like, you are just mimicking Tarantino, you know? And that line where he said, you know, are you too dumb to realize when you know, are you too much of a loser to realize you've actually won? And he says, come again. And there was that line. And you ever seen True Romance, the movie True Romance?
Yeah.
There's that scene where Dennis Hopper says that, you know, black people spawn, you know, I don't want to get into that because that's a very racist line in the movie. And it catches Christopher Walken off guard. And the line he says is, come again. And when you see characters in a Tarantino scripted movie say that, you know something, you know, they're mean people you don't want to fuck with, you know. And he does that. He goes, come again. And then he does it again. He says it to him. And that's what bonds them, because he's like, oh, this guy's got enough balls. All right. You know, here, you're going to have a drink with
me. Yeah, there's the respect.
Yeah.
He's gained his respect because he's got enough balls to say something that they don't like that to him. So,
but he's had enough balls from the very beginning, because in the very beginning, he's like, my children aren't coming with you. And the guy doesn't give him a choice. And understandably so, because if he left the kids, they would call the cops, you know, that's, you know, and everything, and have the cops come. The kids have to come, you know, like there's nothing, you know, there's no way he would leave, you know, any of them. They're either dead or they're coming. And so I absolutely love that. Like, I thought this was one of those things where this film was so well written, you know, period. And I feel like almost like this script doesn't get, like, you know, I the respect it deserves, you know.
I would agree with that. When it came out, I bought the soundtrack, I bought the script. I think I saw it twice in the theater because I really enjoyed it. I actually prefer the first hour over the second. I like all the, you know, the stuff in the RV and at the motel. I find that to be more interesting than the vampire stuff. So I almost wish there was that. That's where the TV show comes in, is that it takes a while for them to actually get to the titty twister.
Good.
It may not even be in the first season, if I remember correctly. It's just them getting to the titty twister, and that may be where the season ends. I could be wrong, but
that would make sense. It takes a long time to get there. But yes,
there's a much longer journey. Yeah. So it's, and plus when you have this cast that's in this film, I mean, it's, you have, you know, Tom Savini, you have Fred Williamson, you have all these people.
I'm sorry, you said his name wrong. It's Fred the Hammer Williamson. And I'm
sorry. You have to do quotes. Fred quotes the Hammer Williamson.
But see,
quotes.
Well, no, but see, I'm saying that you actually have to say the Hammer, or he freaks out. He freaked out on me one day when I introduced him as Fred on an interview. That interview will never see the light of day because he did not tolerate me well. but he was like, you know, I was talking to him and I said, you know, hi, this is Fred Williamson here. And he goes, the Hammer. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, Fred the Hammer Williamson here. And I asked him how he got his name, the Hammer, and blah, blah, blah. Then we started talking about black exploitation. And whoa, don't bring that up to him. He does not believe in black exploitation. He goes, do you ever call all the movies that you make white exploitation movies? I was like, okay, never mind then.
There are some people that get really upset with that, and there's some people that don't, because even though they may be considered as like black exploitation films, it gave a lot of people work. So like, you know, we wouldn't know Pam Grier and some of these other people, you know, if those did not exist. So for some people, they're just their films, don't call them black exploitation. And then for other people, they're just black exploitation. So it just kind of depends on who you talk to.
Yeah. So anyway, I said that's always, since then, I've been like, if I'm ever going to introduce them, I'm not going to call them Fred, just Fred Williamson. He's Fred the Hammer Williamson.
Now you call everybody it. So from now on, when you introduce me, I want to be known as John the Hammer Ward, and I'm going to get mad at you.
Nope, you can't do it though, because he actually had a real nickname. It was a real nickname that was given to him through, I guess it's nickname. Is that what it's, you know, whatever, but it was a, you
well,
know,
he made a movie called The Hammer, right?
No, he got it from, he got it. No, he got it from, what is it? He got it from, when he was in the football, when he was a football player. That was his nickname.
Oh, okay.
So his nickname was, Fred the Hammer Williamson from playing football, you know? So that's what, you know, that was what it came from. So I don't know.
I would hate to hear what O.J. Simpson's nickname would be.
Well, I would love to hear what his nickname now would be. Like, that's more what I would like to hear. You know, O.J. the Killer, you know. Maybe wouldn't it be fun if that what if he was O.J. the Lady Killer? Like, you know, like, it was just some nickname the guys gave him because he was such a ladies' man. And it was foreshadowing his life.
You know,
it's so weird. Like, nobody's ever made a big deal about him being in, like, the Naked Gun movies, because, like, nobody ever goes, oh, you can't watch the Naked Gun movies because, you know, O.J. Simpson is in it. I've never heard anybody freak out about
that.
He's
good in those. I thought it was funny in those.
He was wonderful.
He's also in Towering Inferno and other stuff. I believe he rescues a baby or something at the end of that.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah, definitely. I loved him in that, so... There you go. But yeah,
what do you think to kind of get back to From Dusk Till Dawn? What did you think of the sequel? Sequels.
Well, I saw the second one a while back, mainly because Bruce Campbell and Tiffany Thiessen are in it, and I'm a huge fan of both of them. So I was like, oh my goodness. So, and it was directed by Scott Spiegel, who, once again, we were talking about him earlier, but he was... I've loved him ever since I saw, like, you know, Evil Dead 2, and I didn't see Intruder until much later in life, but I love that movie. I love all the Sam Raimi people, you know, Sam Raimi friends who've gone on to do some amazing stuff. Like, I'm just a fan. Fanboy of that stuff. But I saw I don't really remember it because I did see it years ago on VHS. I'd never watched it. I have this DVD Blu-ray of it that has all of them, including
that's what I have. Yeah, I got the same thing. Yeah.
I want all of them on, like, 4K eventually, because honestly the transfers on this is just kind of blah, you know. It almost feels like a ripped from VHS. Like, it just doesn't look very good, in my opinion.
But surprisingly, for Echo Bay, and I do thank Echo Bay for making Blu-rays like that, I thought it looked pretty good for having four movies on one Blu-ray. They could have been grainy as shit, and they weren't.
You just combined two companies, by the way, Anchor Bay and Echo Bridge.
I'm sorry, I meant Echo Bridge.
Yeah, it was Echo Bridge.
Echo Bridge. Not.
But that would be not, that. Not that Anchor. Would be, if they had made a baby.
That'd be an interesting. It would be company. Yeah.
Called Echo Bay. You know, I would watch it. You know, but yeah. So anyway, yeah. No, Echo Bridge. I love them for doing that, for putting the movies out that, like, a lot of people have been wanting to see, and they're actually doing really well. Like, you know, they're putting out stuff like TV shows that people have been wanting to see, and, you know, movies that, like, you know, have kind of gone under the radar or whatever, you know. But I would love to see, like, Shout Factory or Scream Factory or Arrow or somebody do a From Dusk Till Dawn the right way. The biggest problem is, like, even though it's Dimension Films, you know, and it's Harvey, you know, Harvey's company and everything, Miramax made them. You know, this was, like, before Dimension split and it became the Weinstein Company. So it's part of the Miramax thing. So Miramax, I think, is a little harder to kind of do. Did you hear about the trouble that Tarantino got into recently?
No.
Like, just recently, like, I think a couple of days ago or so, and this is, by the way, this is November that we're recording this, so a couple of days ago was a couple months back, you know, whatever, then when this is going to get released. But basically he had tried to do some NFTs or NT, is it NFTs? I don't know. Non-fungible tokens or whatever with Pulp Fiction, right? And he didn't get Miramax's permission, I guess, or you know, and Miramax wasn't getting a profit off of it. So he's getting a lawsuit right now because of that. So.
Oh, I have no idea. I'll have to look that up. So
yeah,
I do know that he does entertain his foot fetish in From Dusk Till Dawn.
I knew that's okay. So you and I were talking, and I said I was just at the Salma Hayek part, you know, and then you wrote to me two things, and then you unsent the messages.
Yeah, because I figured I didn't want to talk about it as an IM. I figured we'll talk about it on
the podcast, but I knew exactly what you were going to say. You know,
well, here's the thing. I saw an early preview of Desperado. And this is about a year before it came out, and her scene where she's with Antonio Banderas in the film. There's like that sex scene, and she's in front of him, and he's kind of, you know, has his arms around her. And you see her, she's naked, she's nude. And I guess that she like was crying during it. Like it upset her so much. And she had such a difficult time getting through it that when I saw it again, when it came out, that scene was like half of what it was. So Rodriguez must have said, okay, look, I'll cut this down. You know, we're not going to get rid of it, but we'll totally cut it down because it made you so upset and uncomfortable. Which, okay, that's fine. That's understandable. So then you have her come up in From Dusk Till Dawn as this like priestess. And even though she's absolutely beautiful, and especially in this film, she's gorgeous, she doesn't, I don't know. I mean, is she just supposed to be like an erotic dancer? Because she's not a stripper. And then I was looking around at all the other girls, and some are topless, some have like a top on. But you don't really see anybody stripping. They're more dancing.
Right.
And I always thought, like, why would you hire somebody who works at like at a strip bar, but maybe it's not a strip bar, who doesn't take their clothes off? It's like Rob Zombie with Halloween 2, you know, in Halloween 1 with his wife who works at a strip bar and she never takes her clothes off.
Which makes no sense because so she's taken her clothes off before. Like that's, you know, like that's no problem. You know, like she did in Devil's Rejects. You know, maybe that was the thing though. Maybe she was like, I'm only doing it once for you, Rob. You know, after then you got to find somebody else.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. And it's something that so with like From Dusk Till Dawn, I always thought it was just weird. Like, why would you hire somebody, you know, that was really upset with this sex scene, you know, from Desperado, and then you have her come out? Because what is this dance? Like, is this just supposed to hypnotize men?
Uh-huh.
Is it, because it's not like I'm watching it going, everybody is like enthralled, like their eyes are glued to her. I'm bored.
It was like the snake doing stuff. I don't know. It didn't really, it didn't do much for me either. And like with the music and all that, it wasn't all that. The best part of it was the foot part, you know, where she sticks her foot in toe in Tarantino's mouth, basically.
Of course.
That was what I thought you were going to
be
mentioning, because I thought it was hilarious that she did that. She put the stuff, like he wrote that so that he could have Selma Hayek's foot in his mouth, you know, or whatever, whoever was playing that part in his mouth, because obviously he does have a foot thing. So I wonder if like this is thing he does for like, you know, a lot of people, you know, because you hear he's got a foot fetish, whatever, and that's fine. You know, everybody's got something weird that they like.
Everybody's got their kink.
So, I know, yeah, they get their little kink, whatever. For some people, I mean, it's furries. Some people, it's foot fetishes. Yeah. You know,
I just don't know, and I don't own the script anymore, so I would have to check it out. But it's like, was Selma Hayek always planned for this role? And they knew that she would be fully clothed, because it's not like not fully clothed. I mean, she's kind of like in a bikini type thing, but like she doesn't start off fully clothed. And then she gets down to that. And then everybody's like, oh, look. And I don't get the idea that if she's just a dancer, she's not really doing anything that's that's sexy, that would get all the men to kind of like drop the cigarette out of their mouth, or like they would be drinking and it would just be coming, you know, that they're so like fixated on her.
Uh-huh.
It's not that sexy of a dance.
Nope.
Even though she's beautiful to look at, as I'm watching it on screen, I was kind of bored because she doesn't really do anything until the foot thing is up with Tarantino, and then I laugh.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, it all set up for that, right? Her walking down, her getting fixated on Tarantino's character, her doing that stuff to him. I mean, so all in all, it was all like, that was all set for that. So that scene.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can look past all the boringness. The thing I kind of thought about was, at that particular time, Salma Hayek was becoming a bigger name star. Like she, right. I don't know how long it took, maybe 2 years later, she was in Evita, and, you know, there was a bunch of other stuff she was doing. She was, Desperado really helped her career. And Robert Rodriguez, I think, felt like, you know, they had a really good, like, I was surprised Antonio Banderas wasn't in the movie somewhere, you know, or whatever, because they had, you know, had such a good.
But also, yeah, I mean, well, they do, because, well, remember Desperado, our introduction to her is she's walking on the street and the camera's just following her. And she is so beautiful, so gorgeous, and looks so awesome that cars are crashing into each other.
Yeah.
And she's laughing as she's walking.
Yep.
So Robert Rodriguez knows that she's a beautiful woman, and I get that she doesn't want to do nudity. But if there's no nudity, then you got to make the dance better. You got to, is she hypnotizing people? What is she doing? Like, is she getting them set up for later on for the vampires?
Right, you know, but like you also can't give
attention to what's around them.
Well, you can't give them, like, they really did not want to set up, like, you weren't supposed to know about the vampires until, you know, whatever, right? Like, you weren't supposed to know that. So you watch the movie, and, you know, now that you look back at it and everybody's getting, you know, hypnotized, it was probably because they were hypnotized because of her being the vampire thing. But if that was really a big thing, she would have used that more, you know, when she was attacking, you know, people, you know what I mean? Like, I think it was more along the lines of she was hot. People were into her. They were watching, they were, you know, entranced by this dance. And I don't even think it was, yeah, right. It was really, wasn't that entrancing. It was just sort of a hot chick walking down, you know, but she did it, you know, and I thought she did a wonderful job. I mean, you know, it didn't bother me at all. I mean,
no, I was kind of looking at it differently because I really hate in films. In the TV show for From Dusk Till Dawn, there's a lot more with her and Richie. So they kind of become, you know, they kind of get together, not in like a sex way, but they're kind of like, there's a
they're
lot
become
more.
Partners. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those things where, once again, that's why I think that Rodriguez wanted to just kind of flesh it all out for the show.
Well, so I like that.
So it's better, but it's movies like that really, like forgetting Sarah Marshall to me is the worst of doing that, is because you have such big name stars that they're not even going to get into their underwear, basically.
Yeah.
And so when they do these sex scenes, they might as well be wearing an astronaut suit or armor. Because it's the sex is so unrealistic that it's like, why is this even in this film? You might as well cut it and just maybe have them start it and then just cut. And that's kind of how I felt with this, is if she's just meant to be some sort of erotic or exotic dancer, okay, I guess, but what she's doing isn't that sexy.
Yeah. And you
so
know,
maybe for the time it was, I don't know. It's not today.
Right. I mean, maybe it was. I don't know. It didn't bother me when I first saw it. You know, there's never,
I don't think it bothered me either. Except I did say, oh, it's nice to see a stripper not take her clothes off. Because I just took it that she was a stripper.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, and here in Virginia now, I know this was supposed to be Mexico. In Mexico, I don't think they do that. But like in Virginia, a lot of times, unless there's specific, places or something, like specific cities can do it. You can't take your top off. You know, you have to, they have to be in bikinis, you know, the whole time. However, this place did have bikinis and had, you know, topless. So, you know,
right.
I mean,
well, and you figure with the type of bar that it is, that it's in Mexico, with that it wants truckers and bikers, that it would be more of a strip club, you know, right. that the, you know, type of environment.
It was called Titty Twister. So, I mean, like, it, I actually really like, I don't know how they do it in, you know, they, I mean, did it look like the same Titty Twister in the TV show?
More or less. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it was just wonderful. I loved how I loved it with the fire coming out. And I mean, them saying open from dusk till dawn was, you know, like, I thought that was kind of cool. Like, you know, that's where they get the title from, you know, like it's perfect. I actually, okay, we didn't talk about this yet, but I love, absolutely love Cheech Marin in all three of his parts. Like, it's just so strange to see his movie, because you see him in the beginning as the, you know, the Mexican,
the border guy.
Border guy. Yeah, he's just guy, coming up. Yeah. He's coming up and everything. And he, you know, because he has to come on board because he hears the noise and everything. And obviously everything's so suspicious. And then the second time is the pussy lover guy, you know,
pussy.
And then the third guy is they were going to meet him. And not once did anybody make mention that those look like the same three guys, you know, cause it obviously did, you know, like when I first saw it, I go, oh, it's Cheech Marin. Oh, it's Cheech Marin. Oh, okay. Isn't it three times? All right. Awesome. Because I loved him. I loved him in Desperado, in his one cameo in Desperado as the bartender, you know? And so it was, that was fun. But in this one, it was cool to see him be like the Lon Chaney of fucking Robert Rodriguez films.
Yeah, at first, I think when I saw it, I thought it was overdone, especially the whole pussy scene. It was just like, oh my God, how many times can this guy say pussy? And I think it went on too long. And then I probably thought when I left, like, oh my God, does he really need to be in the film three times? But now I appreciate it. Now I like it. I mean, I like him, and I can appreciate the having him in three roles. So when I watched it this time, I did enjoy it. So I think back then I was a little more, I don't know, like really, do you need to have him in three times? Right. Now it's like, sure, why not have him in three times? Because he can't play the bartender in this, because we have Sir Danny Trejo in it, who I just knighted.
Well,
so a very young Sir Danny Trejo.
Well, there's a young, very young one in Desperado too. It was only a year after that they made this, but it was so funny to see. I think it was a year. I think it came out in 2005, but I think it might have been made in 2004 or whatnot. But yeah, seeing Danny Trejo, like, you know, he was in Desperado as this, like, you know, tough guy that the mariachi had to bring down, you know. I'm surprised, because like Desperado was sort of a remake of reboot kind of thing of El Mariachi. They say sequel.
It absolutely
they say
was.
Sequel, but it really wasn't a sequel, because like it did not take, you know, it was a remake, you know, like obviously it was a guy with a, you know, it was the legend of it or whatever. And so it was interesting to see Danny Trejo as like the killer, because at that point Danny Trejo was like as nobody, and I think he was like a cousin of Rodriguez or something.
No, it's Rodriguez's cousin, and he had been in jail and for like murder. And the original plan was El Mariachi was supposed to be three films, and they were all going to be shot by Rodriguez, and he was going to shoot them, and nobody was going to watch him. That was his intention, is I'm going to make this trilogy. I'm going to learn the ins and outs of filmmaking, and nobody needs to see these movies at all. And this will give me, so when I make my big Hollywood movie, I'll know everything. And so these films will just like sit in a closet somewhere. And then El Mariachi was shown and it got picked up. I think it was at Sundance, and then it got picked up and they re-edited the whole movie. So what we see is not the film that was at Sundance, because they actually redid some of the film. And then that's when Columbia said, you know, Columbia Pictures said, we want to do a sequel remake, but with a bigger star.
Right.
And then that's where Desperado comes in. And then it was Tarantino who said, you need to finish the trilogy by making a third film, but you've got to call it like Once Upon a Time in Mexico, because of like all the other films, like Once Upon a Time in America, Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah, so, and then later on, he made Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I thought was hilarious that he like wanted to take the Once Upon a Time thing himself too. Like, I guess he was, maybe he was jealous. Oh man, he did Mexico, but I want to do Hollywood, you know, which actually really works more, I think, honestly, for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as the title, because it's literally a story, you know, it's not real. You know, it's not the real.
Oh yeah, so you know, it's an alternate universe.
It's an alternate universe, so it's a story. You know, it almost feels like Princess Bride-ish, like where you should have had somebody like reading the story of like how this could have happened, but it didn't. You know,
I still think it's Tarantino's best film. I love the movie, and I can't wait for that like extra long version to come out.
Oh, is there an extra long version? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he says there's like a 3-hour cut or over 3-hour cut. So there's the theatrical version, and then he released a little bit of a longer one, you know, when it finally came out on like, you know, DVD and Blu-ray. And now there's an even longer version that he wants to release.
That is cool. I'm with you, dude. The way that for the longest time, Pulp Fiction was my favorite Tarantino directed movie. You know, a lot of people say Reservoir Dogs, which is great. You know, don't get me wrong, but Reservoir Dogs has its flaws and has its issues. And I think it's, you know, kind of, I don't think it's boring, but I think it has some dull moments to it that doesn't, it is because it's a, you know, low budget, you know, like you have to keep everything sort of compact and, you know, and whatnot. And more toward just, you know, mainly inside the, what is it, the warehouse that they're at, mostly, you know, or whatever. But anyway, the but Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is my favorite. And it's so funny because I always feel like my favorite episodes of TV shows are the one before the last episode, right? And a lot of people do that. Like Game of Thrones used to do this, where like the second or the second to last episode was like this big epic, like, you know, like the Red Wedding, and other episodes are like the second to last, I believe, you know, because they want people to watch it all the way to the last episode, you know, right? And whatnot. And I feel like if he's really going to make his last movie, then that's perfect, because it was like one of my favorite episodes. And the cat agrees with me.
Yes.
Absolutely.
He wants attention, lots of attention.
Yes.
It's very much a Boris day today with the meowing. So.
Yep.
But it's, because I never, I have a love-hate relationship with Tarantino. And a lot of that is based off of Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. So it's Reservoir Dogs to me, even though it's a better film than City on Fire, which is a Ringo Lam film that stars Chow Yun-fat and Danny Lee, it is literally a shot-for-shot remake. And that really bothers me with Reservoir Dogs, that Tarantino, who says, you know, he worked in a video store and he's seen every movie made, and then when it was brought up to him, you know, oh, have you seen this film called City on Fire? Because Reservoir Dogs is literally a shot-for-shot remake, including some of the dialogue. He's like, oh, I've never seen that before. And it's like, no, dude, you just ripped off a movie that you thought that nobody saw. Film Threat Magazine actually did an entire magazine, you know, like entire issue based on that. And then some of the stuff from Pulp Fiction, like the whole scene with the needle going into the chest, is actually from a short that Martin Scorsese did. It's these type of things that really bothers me with Tarantino, that it's I like his films now because they don't seem to, he doesn't seem to do that stuff anymore. But yeah. it bothered me at the time. So it's kind of like what's his face who did his writing partner who did Killing Zoe. How they wanted him out of the picture. They were going to Miramax was going to remove him. They were actually going to buy him out and remove him from Pulp Fiction. So then Tarantino would be sole writer, which is why at the Academy Awards, when they did win the Academy Awards, he says, I really have to go to the bathroom because he wanted to piss off Tarantino. Yep. So that was done very intentionally, you know, on that. There's a whole book that's written on this, you know, just on Miramax.
So and you're mentioning Roger Avery, who went on to do...
Roger Avery, yeah.
Who went on to do probably one of my funniest, like, I love Rules of Attraction. I think that's got some like really amazing moments in it. And Roger Avery directed that film and whatnot. And I really like Roger Avery. It's just, you know, you hear these sordid stories about, you know, sort of like, you know, kind of the backstory of people and whatnot. And I have some stories I've heard or whatnot and by people who've worked with Tarantino, you know, and whatnot before his big famous days, you know, but it's just one of those things of like, you know, that's sort of it happened, you know, everybody has their own way of everything, of looking at every, you know, it all. I absolutely love Tarantino's commentary on like True Romance, because he really goes into detail on stuff that happened, you know, with how he was like struggling to get these films done, you know, and everything. And thank God, you know, people actually bought his movies, you know, bought his scripts and stuff. But it was because he learned how to fucking write, you know, he had to write, and he eventually did. And he has a voice, you know, like I said before, you can't mistake in Tarantino dialogue sometimes, you know,
right?
Because he's got a specific stuff he says. You know, Ramblers, let's get rambling. Vampire Hunters, let's get to vampire hunting, you know, or Vampire Killers, let's go into killing vampires, you know, right? Like, you know, if I wrote Ramblers, let's get rambling, everybody would be like, you're ripping off Tarantino, man, you know, which I wouldn't do, you know.
Well, and a lot of people did, you know, when Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction came out. So I think that he's a really good filmmaker. I loved when he shut down that interviewer, you know, when they were interviewing him for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you know, with Margot Robbie, with him saying, well, why doesn't she have so much dialogue? And I think it's a female reporter. And he's just like, I reject, you know, your question.
Your hypothesis.
Which I think is, I reject your hypothesis, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So he's got his moments, but it's a love-hate thing that I have with the guy. So
and he also sometimes
I think he's very funny, other times he's an a-hole.
He told the reporter, one of my favorite ones is he told the reporter this guy was just looking for, you know, he's in the other, the guy still did it with like Robert Downey Jr., you know. So I don't know if this is real or if this is like set up, you know, or whatever for YouTube, you know, kind of thing. Some of them may be set up, you know, because he did this like two or three times. Like, you upset you upset people enough, people may not want you to be interviewing people, you know, because you've got a bad reputation. But if you start doing the same thing like three or four times, then they're probably all in it, you know, or whatever. But the guy says to like Tarantino wants to get into the violence of his films, and Tarantino doesn't want to talk about violence, you know. He wants to talk about, you know, other shit, you know, wants to talk about the movie itself and the making of it, you know, doesn't want to talk about the violence in his films. And he's like, I've talked to, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm not going to answer your question. You know, I'm not going to, you know, it's like, I'm shutting your butt down. You know, is exactly what he said. Cause he doesn't want to hear it. He wants to, you know, he's said it before in multiple interviews. Why, you know, if I ever got the chance to interview him, I mean, I'd be very careful what I asked, because he's been asked everything in the world. I'd ask about the Vega brothers, you know, stuff, and, you know, the connections, you know, between all the characters and things like that. That's what I'd be interested in asking him about. I wouldn't want to ask him.
You know, the Vega brothers have a sister.
What?
Suzanne Vega, the singer, the one who does the song Luca.
Oh,
that's technically their sister.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, Tarantino's comment. Yeah, he said that's where he got the last name from, and that's actually their. It's supposed to be their sister, is her.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I didn't know that. But yeah, the Vega brother and sister movies, you know, or whatever. The connections, they couldn't, unless they recast or they had a Disney budget, they could not, they couldn't shoot John Travolta and Michael Madsen, you know, earlier days without recasting them as like, you know, somebody else. But I would love to see that. I would love to see a Vega boy brothers TV show or something. If he wants to make a TV show after us and like he can, you know, keep it in his world, have like Big Kahuna burgers and red apple cigarettes and other things. You know what I mean? Like, I would love to see that. Like, I'd be down with that. But you know, it's funny because he's also talked about how you.
I don't. Maybe we'll see it. Maybe we'll get it. We don't know.
Well, yeah. If he does TV after, or he might do books or comic books. Who knows what he's gonna do? He needs to finish this fucking last movie, whatever it's gonna be, and then, you know, and that's it. You know, he moves on to whatever else he's doing.
Well, if he ended with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I would be fine with that. If he was gonna stick with that type of thing. I mean, to me, that's a good ending.
It should have been his last. It really should have been his last because it shows his growth from doing Reservoir Dogs, right? This low budget independent film to doing this big epic Hollywood film set in Hollywood, which is his favorite place in the whole world, you know, which is funny considering he's actually like lived there for all his life, I think he was born in Hollywood, you know, but like he's a Hollywood lover, you know. Well, he's old school Hollywood lover.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly enjoy his films more than I do Rob Zombie's.
It'd be like if I wanted like my last film to be about the 90s, you know, and be set in Hollywood or something in the 90s, which I think would be kind of a boring thing, you know, except if I were doing something on like, I don't know, the Corries or something, you know. Like,
oh God.
Or doing a movie about the two Corries who, you know, and the crap that they, you know, but I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. Because that's
no, we already got that with our TV show, The Two Corries. Well, I watched every episode.
Well, we sort of did. We didn't get like real, true shit, you know, I don't think. I think we got reality show version.
Well, the episode of when they were shooting The Lost Boys, when Corey Haim was there, was real. That was him screwing up his lines and everything. Because if you, you know, if you watch, pardon me, the Lost Boys sequel, you know, then where Corey Haim's only at the very end, and then you watch the two Corries that one episode, it all makes sense that he was just completely on drugs, that he couldn't, you know, remember any of his lines or anything like that.
I remember hearing he got really upset. But what?
No, go on. Really upset.
Well, he got really upset that Corey Feldman wanted to get on, you know, the Lost Boys as well. Like he was like getting mad that Corey kept trying to get in on whatever Corey Haim was doing. I'm like thinking, you both were in Lost Boys, you know, like.
Well, that was their plan. Was you know, according to the show and stuff, that Haim kept coming to Feldman saying, you know, we need to write a script about, you know, about like the Frog Brothers, and we need to get me, you know, we need to do like a new, like a sequel to The Lost Boys. And so throughout the whole series, it's all about Haim trying to get this made. But then Warner Brothers came to Corey Feldman and said, well, we want you in the sequel, but we don't want Haim. He's not reliable.
Uh-huh.
And so he did it without Haim knowing it. And that's, you know, and that like kind of destroyed, you know, Corey Haim. And that's, and then Feldman got him, you know, as, you know, as a courtesy because they're friends.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah,
that's a very interesting movie.
Only on one of my shows, only on one of my shows will it go from talking about Tarantino to Corey Haim.
my very shows, true.
Yeah, not many like Joe Rogan won't talk about Tarantino and then go to Corey Haim. You know, I don't think, but I will. Fuck, you know, I'll talk about Ed Wood, you know, and Tarantino and whatnot. But anyway, I just want to say thank you. We're at that time. But thank you so much. Like, this was so much fun. And what I wanted to do is make sure people understand, like, we absolutely love this movie. You know, this movie was a lot of fun. This is a true fun 90s film. We didn't need to talk about, you know, specifics. Like, I mean, I'm definitely not going to talk about Weinstein because don't want to give him a time of day, really, you know. You know, we want to talk about this and how wonderful this fucking movie is, you know, and how awesome, you know. And I'm glad that Tarantino and Rodriguez worked together and made something a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think their pinnacle was probably Grindhouse. I think is the ultimate, you know, collaboration between them. But from Dusk Till Dawn, you know, this film that probably shouldn't have had two sequels and a documentary and a 3-season TV show, really, you know, it really kind of shows how it's sustained in time, that it's had so much after it. Plus, soundtracks, comic books, all that stuff. It's really held up.
Yeah. I got to watch the second and third one again. I forgot that I mentioned Bruce Campbell and Tiffany Amber Thiessen, who are together in a scene, but I forgot even Robert Patrick's in it. You know, fucking T-1000 himself. You know, yeah.
Yeah.
I absolutely love Robert Patrick.
Oh, he's awesome. And then the prequel that Hangman's Daughter isn't bad either. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like low budget kind of like direct-to-video sequels go, they're not bad.
Yeah, I gotta check them out. Michael Parks. Oh, god dang. Danny Trejo, Orlando Jones. Holy shit. Kevin Smith? What? He's in the third one? Wait, Kevin Smith is in the third from Dusk Till Dawn. Or is that another Kevin Smith?
I don't remember him in Texas Blood Money.
No, it wasn't Maybe. Texas Blood Money, the Highway Daughter, Highway's Daughter.
Well, that's a period piece. That's how the Titty Twister came about. That's when it's all like the Aztec temple.
Hangman's Daughter, sorry.
Everything before the Titty Twister gets there.
Hold on, I'm looking this up real quick because it says his name, but I think it's the other Kevin Smith. Yeah, okay, it is a guy named Kevin Smith, but it's another Kevin Smith. Fuck, that got me excited for a second. He probably did that on purpose, that they put his name in the credits.
He should be
there.
like Kenny Smith or Kevin L. Smith or something like that to stop confusion.
Oh yeah, I mean, this dude's literally Kevin Smith. He should be Kevin. I think Kevin Smith was supposed to be Kevin P. Smith because that's his if I'm correct, his middle name is Patrick or something, Kevin Patrick Smith. So I think
yeah, that's what a lot of those guys do.
Yeah, so the other guy should have been Kevin B. Smith or C. Smith, whatever the fuck, you know, his middle initial is. But anyway, that confused me for a second. I was like, wait, because it was Dimension, so it made sense for me. I was like, oh my god, did Kevin Smith do a cameo in this movie? Nope, not the real Kevin Smith.
No, just in Scream 3.
Well, I mean, Jay and Silent Bob make their... Which that would be hilarious. Jay and Silent Bob popped up in a prequel that takes place in like the Western times, I think, was what the Hangman's Daughter one was, you know.
Oh, God. You know,
Jay and Silent Bob.
Don't ruin. Need ruined.
All right, we're done. We're done. That's how we're gonna end it.
I hated that they were Scream 3. I cannot stand that. Hate it.
They loved being in Scream 3 because they got like free craft services and stuff. Hey, I lost you for a second. Hold on a second. It's at the end too.
I guess
of course.
It's fine because it's all be within a movie. Am I back?
Yeah, you're back now. What okay. Were you saying? What was the last thing you said?
Oh, I just said I hated them in Scream 3, but I guess because it's all meta. I mean, whatever. I guess it's all kind of like a movie within a movie anyway. So, but it's just I don't know.
Well,
keep Jane and Bob to his universe. Don't let them in the Scream universe. They don't need to be there.
Well, yeah, they have their own like little snoozy boochies universe. All right. Well, thank you so much, John. I definitely want to have you back on for other shows this year, including 80s horror films and some other ones. So thank you so much. Hope you had a good time. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I did.
And everybody else, thank you guys for joining us. Join us next. I think the next month is going to be Wishmaster. I'm not necessarily sure, so no. Don't quote me on that. But I know that's one we're going to be recording very soon. So, but thank you guys so much for checking this out, and join us next month for a brand new episode. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of 90s Horror Films. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got him. Whoa, did you hear that? Okay. All right.
What's that?
Yeah, I'm hearing some feedback. Hold on, let me start it over again.
Okay.
All right. Hey everybody.
Is it me giving? Oh, I'm sorry. You'll have to start again. But is it me giving you the feedback?
I don't know. It was like hearing. I could hear myself in the back, and I didn't like it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So yeah, it was me. You know, it's okay. This will be outtakes, and I can still hear it. What the fuck. It's never done that before. Well, no, it's done that before, but not for a while. But it's not giving you any feedback, right? So I'm hoping that it's not a problem.
No, it's fine.
Maybe. I mean, I, because, hold on a second. Hello. All right. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.